It's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you'll always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word, and I'm here with Trixie Bond today. Hello there, Trixie.
Hey, Scott.
How are you doing today?
It's a wonderful day on the river.
It is. You know, we're here on the Colorado River at
Lake LBJ.
It's Lake, but near Lake LBJ.
Well, it's
right
an arm of Lake LBJ. Best
arm.
Skiing on the whole lake, supposedly.
It's an estuary, isn't it, actually, rather than an arm? Is that?
It's called an arm.
It is called an arm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, by the way, these martinis are excellent, I must say.
Yes, we've had several. I hope you've enjoyed my lavender martinis.
Yes.
My pomegranate. And
now,
prickly
what is this?
Pear.
Oh, prickly pear.
We started with the prickly pear.
And this one is the
pomegranate.
You know, let's talk about that. I was going to ask you about your cooking, because you had done a cooking show on, was it PBS? Or what was it?
It was a radio talk show.
Oh, really?
In Houston during the 90s for 3.5 years, and it was called Food and Garden Magic.
Tell me about that.
It was fun.
What'd you do?
Once a week, it was broadcast in Houston. We interviewed cookbook authors, gardening experts, restaurateurs, chefs, talked about food, and that's the year I got to meet some very interesting people.
Like?
Emeril Lagasse, before he was famous.
Came to Houston.
Yes.
Was he just passing through? Was he a chef?
No,
here, or what?
He was a chef and had his first cookbook out.
Yeah.
And he contacted our producer, wanting to publicize his cookbook. So he sent us cookbooks. We interviewed. Let me tell you, I guess that was in 93, 94, something like that.
Long before the Food Network, obviously.
Right. And what a nice man. Mm-hmm. Very down to earth. And as you see him on television, he was in person, too.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years after that, I was at a volleyball tournament with my oldest daughter in New Orleans. And I went with another volleyball mom to his restaurant, and he personally cooked us dinner because he remembered me. And for years, he sent me a Christmas card.
Oh, no
every,
kidding.
Yeah,
is that cool
kidding.
Or what?
And the other interesting interview I had during that time was with Robin Leach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was he just passing through town? Was that during the time he had his TV show, The Rich
yes,
and Famous?
Yes,
yes. Oh, okay.
And he, at that time, had I don't know if he still does, a restaurant in Jumbie Bay.
Jumbie Bay.
It's in the Caribbean.
Okay.
And we were talking recipes and herbs and things like that, and I gave him a recipe for a chartreuse spritzer. I have a passion for edible flowers, and chartreuse is a liqueur made by monks, Carthusian monks. And the basis of it is dianthus, which is a flower.
Okay.
You might recognize as sweet William. It kind of tastes like cinnamon with a little honey, but it has maybe 127 different herbs and flowers in this liqueur.
Yeah.
And so I made a spritzer with using chartreuse, sparkling water or seltzer or club soda, and a sprig of rosemary. Well, he kind of flipped out about that. He says, oh, I'm going to include this on my menu in Jumbie Bay. And I'm like, sure you are.
Yeah.
And then maybe 6 months later, the co-host was at a function in Houston at a home, a real nice home in River Oaks, for one of those Disease of the Month fundraisers. And she ended up sitting next to Robin Leach at this fundraiser.
Yeah.
And he complimented her on my recipe. And he actually did include that on his. Yeah. So it was fun.
Wow. And now there was somebody who was a co-host with that, you said.
Yes. Her name was Sharon Graham, a caterer in Houston.
And so what station was that on, by the way?
KNUZ.
Okay. And that lasted for how many years?
About 3.5 years.
And how come that finally fell?
They changed formats. They went from news talk to country.
That doesn't seem N-U-Z for news.
And then
it would have to change the call letters.
KQUE was FM, KNUZ was AM, and they were, sometimes they were, no, they were never simulcast, but we sold them together. And they changed, it was privately owned, and I guess it was in the early 2000s that he sold to one of the big conglomerates.
Now, when it was about magic and edible foods, edible plants, that what kind of magic? I mean, did you do magic on the radio, or tell me about some of that?
Actually, I had a couple of magicians on that were interested in food and did some magic on the radio. I know Bill Palmer did something for us. And
do you remember any of the effects that they...
No.
No. Okay. Did you ever do anything on the radio magic-wise?
No.
Did you talk about magic, or the Magic Island was open at the time? Did you?
Yes.
Did you promote that at all?
Yes. Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. And so that was the magic part of it.
Okay, well, that seemed like an odd title for something if you didn't spend that much time talking about it.
Well, it was mostly, the emphasis was food and gardening.
Not gardening, about plants. I mean, not necessarily edible plants, but just like roses or whatever, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the fertilizer to use and that kind of stuff. So fertilizer and magic does go together as far as the pH. You
know,
so, okay. Got the idea.
Okay, Scott.
Okay, let's drink to that.
Uh-huh.
So you kind of moved, and of course you were doing magic, you know, then at the time. And speaking of the Magic Island, that you had worked many times, of course, at the Magic Island as a house magician there.
Right.
As well as other things. Of course, that what you're most known for, and on, you were on the cover of the Magic magazine. And you had been most noted for doing children's shows and youth things. I want to ask about one of the most difficult shows, perhaps, that you have done. You may have been asked this question before, so you may have had time to think about it. But
I think, without a doubt, the most difficult show I ever did for children was, it was sort of a daycare center for children with autism.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that.
Yes.
Okay.
And I started doing my regular show, but found out really fast that was not going to work, because children with autism are very sensitive to sound, and I always use music under my show and a microphone, and it was too much for them. I had to turn off the music, speak softly, not use a microphone, and... it was hard to engage with these children, but very rewarding when it worked. After the show, there was a, I guess you call them a tween, maybe she was 12 to 13, 14, something like that. Did not speak much, very hard to engage with, but she was fascinated with my close-up magic. And the director of this center was astounded that this young girl sat down on the floor and was doing close-up magic, sponge balls.
That you had taught her?
I did not teach her.
Oh, really?
I was performing for her.
And so she just immediately learned that by rote and just, wow.
But she was speaking to me. She was engaging. She was fascinated. I had her attention, which was astounded the director, because she...
Never focuses.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, without a doubt, that was probably one of the most difficult.
And rewarding, in a way. What would you say about rewarding? I guess you've done other kinds of shows.
And yeah. It's rewarding when you actually affect someone's life. There was another incident that was very rewarding. It was maybe a six-year-old boy. It was a birthday party. And when I entered the house at the front door, he was hiding behind his mom's skirt, so to speak, and would not engage. And his mother was just terrified that he would not help me out or be an assistant during the show. But I did some close-up for him and engaged him and empowered him with something I do. And he just got up, assisted with the program, and his mother called me a year later and said, "You changed my son's life."
Wow.
From that day on, he was no longer a shy little boy. He was the star. So stuff like that.
Yeah. Gave him great self-esteem and changed his life.
Self-esteem. So
did
all I needed.
Did you enjoy really working more like birthday parties, family parties, picnics, hospitals, libraries? You know, what really seemed to be not just rewarding but really fun for you? What did you like?
I did not enjoy working outdoors. I will not do that anymore.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I think the most rewarding shows were school shows, library shows where you actually motivate kids to do something or form an interest.
Did you start actually with your motivational talks before it was required by schools?
Yes, yes.
So you've always had a message.
Always had a message.
Did you change that message from year to year then
Starting in the early, like 2000, I used to do the library shows from year to year, and they have a different theme.
Okay.
So each year the show would change, and every trick would be based around a book to pull the magic out of the book to encourage the kids to read a book. And then I always had a little message that motivation for people to check out books at the end of the show, so the librarian looks like the hero for bringing in entertainment. Justified her job.
Right. And so that required a lot of travel, mainly around Texas, or did you countrywide?
No,
or what?
That was only around Texas, and it was during the summer. Intense 8 to 9 weeks of work. Sometimes in
two, three, 4 days? What?
Yes. Sometimes 95 shows in 6 to 8 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. But I looked at it as kind of a vacation because I discovered some different parts of Texas, got to travel.
Meet some interesting people.
Yes.
Sure. And speaking of food, did you then get to eat at some nice restaurants or get some ideas, recipes and things?
Absolutely. That was one of the bonus. And I remember,
tell me about that.
Well, up in Central Texas, where I ended up living, and I'm here now because of the library shows that I did.
Really?
Yeah, no kidding. In
what'd
the
you do?
Early 2000. Well, I used to go to the Texas Library Association conventions, and one year the librarians got together, and they were the librarians for Marble Falls, Burnet, Bertram, and Ocala, and they booked me to do all four libraries in like a 2-day period. That was my first exposure to Lake LBJ, Marble Falls.
In the hill country up here.
In the hill country. And it is just, it's gorgeous. I fell in love with it and said, that's where I'd like to live one day. And here I am.
That's right. It couldn't be better. Right here on
the
river.
But speaking of things, wonderful places to eat, when I was up here, one of the shows I also performed in Llano, Texas. That's L-L-A-N-O. You might think it's Llano, but they say it is Llano. Llano is home to a world-famous barbecue place called Cooper's. Have you ever heard of Cooper's Barbecue? Oh! They have outdoor barbecue pits, maybe 6 or 7 of them, that must be 12, 15 feet long.
Yeah.
And it's just an old dumpy building, but they have a sidewalk that goes around the building. And at lunchtime, you could be in a line 2 blocks long to get barbecue for this place. And what you do...
And when they're out probably. They only
that's
cook
right.
so much, I'm sure.
They cook tons because they have all these different pits that are running. And you can get any kind of meat, grilled, barbecued. They dip it in sauce at the end. And it all looks so good. I mean, they have beef ribs, pork ribs, sausages, brisket, sirloin, turkey. You name any cut of meat, they have it, and they've grilled it. And you walk up for the first time and think, ooh, I want a piece of that. I want a piece of this. Let me have a one rib. And Rachel, my assistant at the time, and I go inside, and they weigh it, you know, each piece they weigh, and each price has, you know, each piece has a different
right.
price.
Right, chicken or beef or whatever.
Can you imagine what lunch for two girls cost?
I would say...
With iced tea.
With iced tea. Did you get beans or...
Oh, beans are free at this place.
Okay, and the bread and potato salad. And
yeah.
All that. I'd probably say that 15, 16 bucks?
No, try 50.
50 bucks?
50, but we ate for 3 days on what we took.
Oh, man. How many pounds did you get?
I don't know, but it was delicious.
Holy moly.
Yes. So I've been back since, but I know how to...
Order.
You don't do it all at once.
Yes. Well, now that we do have the Food Network, have you thought ever about doing something that's like magic and food again, or doing some sort of a show maybe on PBS or...
Well, funny you should ask that, Scott.
Okay.
I think I just told you about this. There is a new PBS show coming out called Down to Earth. The host is Andrea Brightout, a former radio show host on Mother Earth News. And a couple of years, I guess last year, I did a couple of interviews with her on my edible flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
didn't you write a book about edible flowers?
Yes, I did. Recipes and edible flowers.
Which is still available?
It is.
Through?
Through me, through my website.
Which is?
TrixieBond.com. That's
B
as in boy, O-N-D. Anyway, Down to Earth should be coming out perhaps this next fall.
Mm-hmm.
It's been accepted. It's going to start in Dallas and Austin.
Hmm.
It's a very interesting show about interesting people all throughout Texas that are doing earthy things. So they came to my house and filmed about 10 different segments. I cooked and garnished.
How'd they find you?
Well, Andrea had interviewed me on radio before.
Okay.
I don't know how she found me. Anyway, but they filmed my garden, which is full of herbs,
mm-hmm.
and did recipes. It was a film crew of like 7 people.
Holy moly.
I know. There was a production person.
Sound and light.
Well, sound, light. And
video.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was quite professional, as a matter of fact. So we filmed about 4 segments in my kitchen downstairs.
Yeah.
They tore apart the kitchen to rearrange it for all their lights.
Yeah.
And I did some quick tips. And as we got going, they'd go, "That's good, that's good. Do another one, do another one." So we did. And then we came upstairs in the house, and I have a magic bar upstairs that's decorated with a lot of magic memorabilia I've collected over the last 40 years. And so I concocted some cocktails using flowers and herbs, and I made them
like
a
lavender
infused
martini there, which happened to be quite tasty.
But when I served that, I had the bottle in a ice surrounded by flowers that was all fused in. It was, it's pretty. When I do a presentation for that. Today, you just got the straight good stuff.
Yeah. Without the presentation, which is fine.
And then I grow about 10 different kinds of mint in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And Emeril said he grew mint just to make
juleps.
Mint juleps.
Sure.
Right?
We did that years ago.
Right?
My wife and
well,
I have it, yeah.
That's exactly what I do, too. And he would keep in his refrigerator a bottle of simple syrup infused with mint.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I do the same. But I did mint juleps from him. For the TV show in the Sterling cups and all frosted and perfectly served. Did my chartreuse spritzer. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And the lavender martinis. And then I did a little magic on the bar for him. So that may be coming out on a PBS station near you.
Near you sometime soon.
Soon. Who knows?
Oh, cool. Will there be a link, perhaps, you're going to put on your website or something to...
When it happens, yes. DownToEarth.com.
DownToEarth.com. That's the website for the
I believe
Mother
it
Earth
is,
thing.
Yes.
DownToEarth.com. Okay.
The TV show.
Let me really regress over here to when you had first actually won a contest. Was the TAOM, Texas Association of Magicians, your first contest win? As a child, you were a youth, young magician?
Maybe. That first win was in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
I think I competed in some things earlier, but I don't remember. I've thrown away all those other junky trophies. I've kept the TAOM trophies.
It's a beautiful trophy, yeah.
Yes. Worth keeping. Did you see them out there?
I did see some trophies out there, yes. And that I'll post that on the website, too, so others can see these as well. So you had some that you haven't kept, so you won a lot of trophies and everything since then in different contests. All on stage? Did you have, like, a different persona then than you do now? Or I should say now, but in your professional career?
Yeah, I used to be really cute.
And you still are. But I like the persona that you have of kind of a Mary Poppins kind of a
before
character.
That, it was more of an Alice in Wonder, a dark-headed Alice in
How
Wonderland.
Did you develop your character? Your first character, and then we'll
the
go to the
first character?
Yeah.
Well,
did you think Alice was magical or something?
I've always thought Alice was magical.
You know, Mark D'Souza collects all this Alice in Wonderland. He's huge into that. Big
no kidding.
Oh, yeah, Lewis Carroll. Yeah, go to his house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he loved my Alice in Wonderland teapot over there in the case.
Yeah.
You seen that?
No, I'll take a look at that later.
You'll have to take a picture of that for him. But I always thought Alice in Wonderland was pure magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of gave me a handle. It was full of flowers and
things that
rabbits. And
appealed to you.
Appealed to me, and it became me.
Mm-hmm.
One day I thought, gosh, I'm going to be Grandma in Wonderland one day. Maybe that wouldn't be so bad.
And so that was the character that you had in your early contest and everything.
Correct.
Okay.
Except for one year that I lost, and I was kind of a Aquarius gypsy.
The age of Aquarius.
The age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
That was the year with see-through bell bottoms and fluorescent bikini underneath.
In the 1970s, yeah.
Yes,
the
under black light zombie ball.
Wow, I would like to see a copy of a video
of that
one.
I'll show you a picture.
Cool. Okay.
Amazing. And then it was back to...
But you lost out because you realized that was really not you. Did you feel comfortable doing that? I mean, that was your...
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But it just wasn't working for you.
It wasn't working. I mean, you can't go do a birthday party like that.
Yeah, the kids are going, wow, the parents are sitting in the back of the room, what is she doing?
Exactly.
Well, it wouldn't have legs either. Well, you had legs, but I mean, it wouldn't go on for years, obviously. Obviously, things have changed, thankfully. I've gotten rid of my polyester suit and my wide collars and all that.
And the ruffled shirts,
ruffled
too.
Shirts.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, indeed, yeah. So then you developed the Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm. And that was in the mid-90s.
Grow into that, just because you were getting older and you saw yourself as that character, or what?
Do you believe that inspiration's just lightning bolt you?
I do.
Well, that's exactly what happened. And
who,
I was
what
just
inspired you?
It was I can't tell you. No. I just don't know. But it just flooded into me one day as a beam of light that's the direction I should go. And I don't know whether it was God's hand or what, but when I had that message, everything fell into place.
Wow.
The costume was made in 10 days after that.
It just all was clarified immediately.
It just went boom.
And it wasn't from seeing someone. It was just kind of
sitting
there, all of a sudden you were inspired. It wasn't like you woke up one morning. You were actually awake.
I was awake.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew.
Hmm. Hmm.
I can't be any more specific than that, but that's exactly what happened.
So you developed this routine, or rather this persona, and then did the tricks follow, thinking that these are the kinds of things that Mary Poppins would do, she could make happen? Or how did you develop the tricks to the character?
You can't really say Mary Poppins.
Well,
it was Poppins-like.
Poppins, yes.
Poppins-like.
Sorry. Forgive me. Yes, Poppinish.
So she had the tea party. I already did the silk blow with liquid penetration.
Which you later ended up marketing, too.
Yes, as a matter of fact. Jay Marshall signed over the rights to me to manufacture the silk blow, which was originally...
Magic Ink?
Yes, he had that. But before that, I've just gone blank, it was a coin worker... out of Colorado that had it.
Oh, Dave Neighbors.
No.
Steve Aldridge, coin worker.
I'll think of it in a moment. But it was his trick, and then that passed to Magic Ink,
mm-hmm.
and then Jay Marshall signed it over to me.
Hmm.
And I was producing them till the guy that did all the metal work, beautiful, hand-forged things, passed away.
Yeah.
But I have... believe I found someone new to do the metalwork in Austin, Texas.
Now you were also marketing the pop ones. Tell me about that.
I guess I bought my first Supreme pop one in 1960 something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember when, and I used that through almost every show. Great utility prop.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Funny.
And one. For 11 years, I was a magician at a camp for kids with cancer. And I always did the opening ceremony and did some magic.
Camp for All?
Camp for All.
Yep.
Camp Periwinkle mm-hmm. is the camp. And there's a campfire. Well, guess what? The kids squeeze the wand, the top of the wand.
Went straight to the fire?
Into the campfire.
Oh,
seriously.
Yeah.
Well, that's in the trick I've used for 40 years, right? So after the children left, the fire was out. I rescued that top, and it was still hot, so I was able to mold the hot plastic back there.
With your
and
fingers.
Let me tell you, I used that top for several years like that.
Because what, Supreme stopped making it or something?
Yeah, they stopped making it. They were out of business.
Yeah.
And one day I was in a plastic store, and I saw something. I was looking at my tea glasses needed to be re-glued, and it takes a special acrylic glue from an acrylic place. And I saw something and went, oh, that could be it. And again, it was an inspiration from above. Everything fell in place, and I was back in business, and I've since sold about 60,000 of those. 60,000 of my pop
amazing.
Wines. That's how I put a couple of kids through college.
Yeah. Your pop wines. Incredible. And you're still marketing it.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm down to the last few boxes.
And so the ideas that you've had, it sounds like, have just been some inspirations that have hit you like lightning, not necessarily something that has been through something that you have been working on and developing. And
oh, it's that too, Scott. We all think about and develop and work, but I've had a couple of really fortunate lightning bolts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing's easy.
Sure.
I mean, everything's easy if you know how.
After
40 years of experience, right? It's all easy.
Exactly. I always say a child of five could do it with 20 years experience.
That's the line.
Yeah. So again, you develop the character of the poppin' like character, where that you're going to be the magical nanny, basically.
Yes.
That seems to kind of make sense, because as a nanny, that you're taking care of children, and when you go to birthday parties, you end up with the parents usually in the back of the room, and you are the caretaker. You're the nanny, for
the
kids. Yes,
you're the expensive babysitter.
Expensive babysitter, exactly. Have you had some particularly bad experiences with some birthday parties?
Challenging birthday
parties?
Challenging.
Maybe challenge is a better word.
Yes, indeed I have.
Like?
Oh, the one that comes to mind was at a very upscale home. Both the parents were attorneys. And this party, I believe this was their only child, but they had hired a terrific caterer there. And there were popcorn machines, snow cone machines, pony rides.
Pony rides,
the whole
circus,
thing.
Yeah.
They did. And in the kitchen, which had this enormous island, the parents of all the children were having a vertical tequila tasting. I am not kidding you. They were all doing tequila shots
in the kitchen.
Right.
Okay.
And then it started to rain.
And you were outside.
No, it was in the room. I don't do outdoor shows. But it started to rain, which meant the ponies might be leaving soon because it started to rain.
So how many kids were at this party?
Oh,
20, 30, 60?
No, 40.
Okay.
40. And so the dad comes in and said, all the children must go outside to ride the ponies before they leave. Now!
In the middle of your show.
In the middle of my show.
Perfect timing.
Well, that was the end of that show.
Thanks for coming. We'll see you next year.
Yeah. How can
drive safe?
How can? Because once I have those children's attention, they're good for 45 minutes to an hour, and they were all entranced. But boy, did that blow it! Then I've done some other shows for some famous celebrities in Houston, some basketball players, some football players that live in mega mansions.
Nice places, yeah.
And one of the nicest shows I did was for a really famous baseball player in Houston. And I was met at his home by the house manager.
The house manager. Did they introduce himself?
Yes, as the house manager. Oh, I've been to other homes that have house managers. Some oil company people. Well, I shouldn't say their names. But anyway, the baseball player had a house manager, and they helped get you all set up. And the theme of the party was the Wizard of Oz.
And you knew this going in?
No.
Oh, this is surprised
you. Here I am arriving at my appointed time, and it's all set up.
In character and your costume.
Yes, it's the Wizard of Oz, which is fine. And they had the yellow brick road leading up to the door. I mean, no kidding. And the premier caterer in Houston catered. What is he doing with a 7-year-old birthday party? I don't know. But he was
money
there.
Money talks.
Exactly. And the Wizard of Oz was playing on every 70-inch flat screen in the house,
yeah.
right? And then I start setting up in the living room, and the mom comes in, oh, no, no, you must go outside. You can't go in here. They had set up the backyard with the orange lights and all the bushes, and I was to perform on the basketball court.
Okay.
Yep. And
this is an evening or afternoon?
Afternoon.
Okay.
And I said, oh, no, this is not going to work, but they wanted off the basketball court in the grass. And my tables are wobbly in the grass, right?
Sure. Now, this was a hard court basketball? I mean, was it wooden?
Oh, that was. But it was near the basketball court. I was just
sitting
on
to be
the grass.
Grass.
I
yeah.
was on
yeah.
the grass.
Yeah.
And I said, please don't do this to me. But this is, you know, what do you say when somebody is this high profile mm-hmm. and wants you to set up in the grass?
Right.
And I knew that my sound system was going to blow the breaker.
Uh-huh.
So I tell my assistant, this is going to happen. When I do this trick, you come hold this table because I don't want the glasses tipping. And if the sound system blows all the lights and breaks the breaker, this is the guy you need to find.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Everything happened just as I predicted. I blew the electricity, the breaker for with my sound system.
Yeah.
Anyway, my assistant is great. She was well-trained and she found the house manager. We got the breaker back on and worked out all the bugs. And at the end, the parents were just deliriously happy. And oh, I guess I can say his name. Jeff Bagwell was mm-hmm. the basketball or the baseball player. What a nice man.
Yeah.
Oh, of
I've
course.
Heard other stories about
yes,
him. Bringing this great guy.
Every single parent that came to that party, of course, stayed at the party.
Yeah.
So it was full of, it must have been 50 children and 100 parents, right?
Because
mm-hmm. they all stayed. But he participated in the tricks that I have for the parents that join the kids and just was a delightful family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those little bugs work out. You know what's coming after a while and you're able to foresee that this is going to happen. So that turned out to be a good experience.
So they didn't have any problem with the breakers going out or whatever?
Yeah.
Because
so,
you remedied the problem quickly.
I knew that was going to happen, so.
Why did you know that was going to happen? Had it happened somewhere else in the past, and so you thought this may happen again, or what?
Yeah. Because I carried a sound system
yeah.
with an amplifier and my microphone, and I looked what it was plugged into, mm-hmm. and they had a million jillion lights in the backyard. I
yeah.
knew I was going to blow the
this
amp.
This would be just one more amperage.
Yeah.
That would be
yeah.
too much. Yeah, Kathy and I were working in a shopping mall one time for Easter, and we were doing a flash pot, and I had a feeling that might do it also, and so we were making the Easter bunny appear, which was her, you know, in the costume, and long story short, we blew everything in the whole shopping mall on that Saturday morning in Midland, Texas.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, shorted out the whole place, yeah.
Well, I've had fun experience with flash pots, too. I burned all my eyelashes off on one of those. And hair. That smells real good during a show.
Yeah, and you had to finish the rest of the show. It's not like you can stop. Okay, that's it. Thanks a lot, kids.
Yes. I didn't use a flash pot after that.
No, nor did we.
Uh-huh.
Nor did we. That was a learning experience, I guess.
In fact, I think in the Austin auction, I put that flash pot up in the
did
auction.
You?
Yes, I did. With great joy. I hadn't used it in 35 years. It was time to get rid of it.
Let somebody else enjoy it, have their
right.
experience.
Yes, exactly.
So you have moved then from Houston, where you were born, and that you had moved then into but Austin. Boy, let's go back again to the very beginning. Your father, Charlie Dodson, who had named you Trixie. Was he a magician beforehand, or why did he come up with the name Trixie, or did you develop, or how did that come about?
Magic has always been a hobby with him.
Yeah.
And he was a hobbyist and a member of all the magic clubs in Houston, and I guess he just wanted a daughter named Trixie, and I wasn't quite fit to do bubble dancing, so I did magic.
You pursued the correct career.
Yes, thank
that
you.
That made him happy.
Yes, I did.
That's right.
And it's been a wonderful career, a
yeah.
nice ride. I've enjoyed all the friends I've met. And
traveled the world, and
yes.
it's been very good for you. You were featured on the cover of Magic Magazine. When was that?
2002.
It was been a few years back.
Yes.
Yeah.
10 years. Gosh,
yeah.
10 years? Where did it go?
Boy, isn't that a fact?
Wow.
It does fly. And you have since then trained a...
Okay. In 2000, I think I have twin daughters that had always worked with me during high school. These girls from maybe middle school through high school had more dental and doctor's appointment than any other child in school because they were doing shows.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience because these girls have been in every social setting imaginable. Mm-hmm. To the White House with me.
That's right. You're in the Easter egg roll, the White House lawn.
So, I mean, they have seen every walk of life, every home, and it served them well. But when they graduated from high school, they were done, and they went on to college at University of Texas.
And that's fine, and they're moving on.
Yeah, they're moving on. It was not their thing. So one night I was at one of the graduation lock-in parties all night, and my friend Dan Dunn, who was a character artist at the time, was there, and what a nice man. And we worked a lot of functions together, and every time I'd see him, I knew that was a safe place to park my briefcase while I did strolling magic, and I'd always inquire about his family. And we were chatting before the event got started and said, my girls have graduated from high school. I don't know what I'm going to do. I need an assistant. He goes, I have five children. I have three daughters. And the next week, his oldest daughter, Danielle Dunn, started to work for me.
Yeah.
And then the next one, Caitlin, and then Rachel Dunn, when she was 11 and a half, started to work with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 7-8 years ago that Rachel started. So, I mean...
When you say work with you...
As my assistant.
I'm just thinking of other children's shows entertainers who are listening to this, if they want to have an assistant or something. So what did she do? Just carry your things in? Did she hand you things? What did you do?
When I was very busy, I was doing any place between 3 and 6 events in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it is was impossible for me to load up, reset, and get to the next event in time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had to make the money.
Sure.
Keep going. It was necessary to have an assistant to reset, hand me things during the show, and then while I finish up with the children, load the car. She's packing. And by the time I've said goodbye, the car has started. Because time was of the essence.
To get to the next one.
Absolutely.
It kind of reminds me, you know, David Kay, Silly Billy, had told me before where he had a driver that would take him from place to place. So he would have a limo waiting for him outside the whole time. When he's finished, he runs in and he's putting back on a show and he's going to the next place.
That's right.
You just got to have somebody like
that. Oh, a friend of mine, Joseph, from Croatia, has a driver as well. Hmm. And he, you know, does 5-6 shows a day. And he hires a driver because it's... When you are on a time schedule, and especially in a large city like Houston with traffic, I would allow...
You don't need that extra stress either.
No. And if there was road construction, road blockage, I was freaking out because I couldn't be late.
Of course.
I could not be late.
Yeah.
I had to be at the next event.
And so she would be packing stuff as you were finished with the trick.
And Rachel is a delightful young lady. Today... She's almost 19 years old. She just graduated from high school. She's got a scholarship into a university in Washington State. I'm not sure the name of it. Bright young lady.
And she's won some contests, too.
Yes, she has. Yeah. So we've spent many hotel nights together. We've been on the road thousands and thousands of miles together, daydreaming up. And so she took to magic. She loves magic. And we were able to dream up her own persona. And it served her well.
She has a beautiful routine as a fairy.
A fairy,
yeah.
Right.
With the mushrooms she sets on and everything. It's
a 6-foot fairy.
Yeah. She is rather tall, that's true.
She's 6 feet
her dad,
tall.
Dan, yeah, so those who don't know Dan Dunn, Dan, of course, had gone on from being a character artist.
Oh, and it's all because of Rachel. Do you know this story?
No, I don't know that story.
Okay. Well, Dan Dunn is a speed painter. I believe it was maybe four years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel wanted to show her friends what her dad did, which is speed painting. He takes a 7-foot by 7-foot canvas and paints an image on it while it's spinning, right, and turning around. and then you recognize it. And
you've seen these, yeah, he works like at basketball halftime shows.
Oh, he was on the Super Bowl.
He was on the Super Bowl. He's on Ellen DeGeneres. Yes, right, right.
And he performed all over the world,
yes,
thanks to Rachel, who 4 years ago wanted to show her friends what her dad did.
Yeah.
And he had done a show at an Atlantic City casino. So she put it on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
Well, in 3 months, that YouTube thing had 4 million hits.
Holy cow.
And
wow.
So he went from being a character artist in Houston to a world-renowned, world-class street painter.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a fairy tale, that in itself.
You know, I was talking with Dan just recently. You know, we had, of course, Cherie Kay, who had recently passed, and we were at a funeral for her, and was visiting with him, and he was talking about America's Got Talent. Because there have been other speed painters. Now there are sand painters. He's doing sand painting.
I know.
Now too.
Do you know he's developed? Did he tell you about his Las Vegas show?
No.
Full hour and a half show with dancers and other painters?
Dan? No.
Whoa.
So what's he going to do with that?
Well, I better not say anymore.
Well, that sounds pretty cool.
It's going to be wonderful.
But he was just saying about how that on America's Got Talent, that when he was there, that he was talking about, you know, I've traveled here and there, and my job has afforded me these great opportunities and everything. And so he was not moved forward because when they came back, they said, well, the problem is that, yeah, this is great. However, that your backstory is that, you know, you've already done all the stuff that we would take you to do. You know?
And he has.
But, yeah, and so what he should have, and he says in hindsight, then obviously I should have been saying, oh, man, this would be so great. I would love to get some exposure. I really would like to travel. I'd like to, you know, but he's done all that. So he just
even performed at Simon Cowell's 50th birthday party 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a good story. Ask him sometime.
I will. He's just a great guy. He's a very nice guy. And Rachel as well. So she's carrying on, is doing kind of the...
She has started to perform birthdays on her own. Mm-hmm. I've kind of gone into semi-retirement, I guess.
Yeah.
Out of my choice.
Yeah, sure. Well, exactly. Yeah.
My choice.
You kind of relax. You got gardening to do. You got your new TV show with PBS.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Yeah. So if they tap you and they like you, then you think a food channel may be the next thing?
I don't know.
You know,
I don't know. I don't know if I want to work that hard, Scott. I've worked hard for a long time.
You have, yeah, doing that many shows and everything. One of my buddies and I had talked about doing a magic food show, and his passion was
really?
French cooking. Yes.
Who's that?
Steve Becker. And he had a
He's
stroke.
He's a cook?
He's a cook. He had a stroke. It was a problem. I mean, we had put the whole thing together, and we were starting to video. I mean, he used to spend 2 weeks out of the year going to France and studying, and he built his house around his kitchen. He actually had a home built, but the kitchen is restaurant quality with the ovens and the stoves and everything else. The guy is, and whenever we go over for dinner, it used to be that he would have a menu. This is what we're going to be having, you know, and we'd sit down. He would prepare the food. So it'd be a bar much like we're sitting at right now while he'd be behind there, you know, cooking. And so Kathy and I and our wives, his wife and the other guests would be sitting while, you know, be working on the next course. And then we would sit down and eat. And then we'd have a different wine to complement that. And he was, you know, and so the idea was to have a cooking show, and then I would be doing some magic, because he'd be talking about some of his recipes that he's developed. And then he had a stroke, and he's really not recovered. And so,
is that Larry Becker?
No, Steve Becker.
Steve
no,
Becker.
No. He was in the natural gas business with me, you know,
in
the energy business some years ago. And so it was a sad thing. We're still good friends, and we get together and go to movies regularly. But it was something that they were talking about the next great chef on the Food Channel, of having this TV show of, you know, giving somebody their own TV series or something. And so we were going to put something together and compete for that, or we were going to put something on PBS. And that, unfortunately,
you know, my kids want me to compete on MasterChef.
I think you should consider that. You are a master chef. I mean, every time that I come around you, we always talk about food, you know, which is one of my passions, too, is Banachek always kids me about that. he always comes back around to food. Well, you know, he's lost about 20 pounds. I just...
I rest my case. He doesn't eat.
That's true. Well, I'm always on it because he doesn't exercise. At least I'm out trying to...
Yeah, you do.
Going to spin class and everything. So you have kind of gone into semi-retirement, meaning that from time to time you still take a show if it's something you want to do.
I don't want to publicize this, but it's only free shows that I'm doing now.
Okay, so you're just doing like charity or something
charity
that really
events
makes it.
That makes that tugs at my heart.
Right.
And I'm now active with the Austin Magic Club as well.
Yeah.
And the Magic Auction in Austin, which I'll be chairing next year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
Now, as we start to close, a couple things. One is that, obviously, that the place where most magicians get involved, first of all, are with children's shows. Are there any advice that you could give to people who are doing birthday parties, children's shows?
What yes, don't be embarrassed that you do birthday parties. That's the bread and butter of the entire magic business. Mm-hmm. And magic is a business just like any other business, and if you want to make money, look at it that way.
Yeah.
I think the clubs are a great way to learn and
sure you should go to a club then too,
right.
You're saying as well.
Absolutely. It's a good place to meet people and learn how to do things and see lectures, which is really nice, and read.
Good advice. Which brings me to my final question over here. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. My question to you is, what is your magic word? It's not necessarily something that you would use during your show. It could be something that's a credo you live by or whatever. What is your Trixie Bond's magic word?
Wow.
That's a good word.
Yeah, wow. My magic word.
Yeah.
I hope you edit this. I don't... My magic word.
Hmm.
Love one another.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Love one another. It didn't have to be a word. It could be a phrase. Love one another.
Love one another.
That's very good.
Okay.
Because you live life by that.
Absolutely. And I live each day to its very fullest. And I appreciate life every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day above the ground is a good day.
So it's all about love. That's great. Well, Trixie Bond, I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Scott.
Great.
It's been fun.
I appreciate it. Oh, it has been.
Cheers.
And so that was Trixie Bond. And from Burnett, Texas, here we are for the magic word. This is Scotty out.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.